showed inexplicable errors. It was obvious that the exponential field was the cause of the troubles, despite the fact that they were only apparent when it was switched off. The explanation came too late to do us any good, and Norton's final discomfiture was small consolation for the virtual loss of the war. As I have explained, the field generators produced a radial distortion of space, distances appearing greater and greater as one approached the center of the artificial pseudo-space. When the field was switched off, conditions returned to normal, but not quite. It was never possible to restore the initial state exactly. Switching the field on and off was equivalent to an elongation and contraction of the ship carrying the generator, but there was an hysteresis effect, as it were, and the initial condition was never quite reproducible, owing to all the thousands of electrical changes and movements of mass aboard the ship while the field was on. These asymmetries and distortions were cumulative, and though they seldom amounted to more than a fraction of 1%, that was quite enough. It meant that the precision ranging equipment and the tuned circuits in the communication apparatus were thrown completely out of adjustment. Any single ship could never detect the change. Only when it compared its equipment with that of another vessel, or tried to communicate with it, could it tell what had happened. It is impossible to describe the resultant chaos. Not a single component of one ship could be expected with certainty to work aboard another. The very nuts and bolts were no longer interchangeable, and the supply position became quite impossible. Given time, we might even have overcome these difficulties, but the enemy ships were already attacking in thousands, with weapons which now seemed centuries behind those we had invented. Our magnificent fleet, crippled by our own science, fought on as best it could until it was overwhelmed and forced to surrender. The ships fitted with the field were still invulnerable, but as fighting units they were almost helpless. Every time they switched on their generators to escape from enemy attack, the permanent distortion of their equipment increased. In a month, it was all over. This is the true story of our defeat, which I give without prejudice to my defense before this court. I make it, as I have said, to counteract the libels that have been circulating against the men who fought under me, and to show where the true blame for our misfortunes lay. Finally, my request, which, as the court will now realize, I make in no frivolous a manner, and which I hope will therefore be granted. The court will be aware that the conditions under which we are housed and the constant surveillance to which we are subjected night and day are somewhat distressing. Yet I am not complaining of this, nor do I complain of the fact that the shortage of accommodations has made it necessary to house us in pairs. But I cannot be held responsible for my future actions if I am compelled any longer to share my cell with Professor Norton, late chief of the research staff of my armed forces.